Welcome to the Mountain Grapevine program on WART Community Radio for Madison County, North Carolina. My name is Chuck Blethyn, your host for today's program. The Mountain Grapevine reports on all things grape and wine in the mountains of western North Carolina, and sometimes elsewhere. My programs will have interviews with movers and shakers in the viticulture and wine industries, as well as some educational sessions on wine etiquette, wine evaluation, and special value-added products that can be made from grapes.
Well, welcome to the Mountain Grapevine Radio program, everybody. On the telephone today, we have John Holman. He's the founder of American Alcoholery Holman Distillery, located in Moravian Falls, North Carolina. And for those of you who aren't familiar with the geography in that part of the state, it's about 15 miles south of Wilkesboro. John, welcome to the program.
Thank you very much.
Well, John, everybody's interested in the distilleries. As you know, out here in Madison County, that used to be our bill of fare for most things here in the past century or so. But tell us about your distillery. How'd you get interested in it, and what are you doing there? How big is it, capacity, and all that kind of good stuff. Just tell us all the things you want us to know about it.
All right. Well, I'm a past veteran of the alcohol business. I worked for a California winery, E&J Gallo Winery, for over 16 and a half years. And I decided to start my distillery when I saw an opportunity in craft, and the ability to start my own business was the main driver in it. And we decided to buy a farm and moved out here to Moravian Falls. It gives me the ability to actually live on the premise to have my distillery. We built the building from the ground up. It's 40 by 60, 2,400 square feet with 17 and a half feet to 25 feet headspace inside of it for future expansion. Ample drainage. We run two reflux stills with 100-gallon kettles. 8 plates each, which helps us get effective separation for making vodka. And we have 3,500 gallons of fermentation space for various products. Currently, I'm fermenting a 2016 Pink Lady apple juice, which I'll be producing a brandy later this year, which I'm hoping to launch for the Apple Festival in Wilkesboro.
Well, for us out here in the western part of the state, we're always interested in finding new markets for the products we grow. And as you know, I've been quite interested for the last 7-8 years working with these cold hardy muscadines out here. And I understand that you use muscadines for making some of your products.
Yes, that's my lead and first product. Is I'm originally from Reidsville, North Carolina, which is just north of Greensboro. And as a boy, I used to eat muscadines off my neighbor's vine all the time by my grandma's house, and I've always loved muscadines and muscadine wine. And when I had the ability to start this distillery, I was looking for uniqueness to begin my first product, and vodka is an unaged spirit, which is easier to bring to market. And so what wasn't being produced currently is a vodka made from muscadines.
For those in the radio audience who don't know any difference, explain to us what the difference is between muscadine vodka versus what we would regularly buy at the store as vodka, and brandy and grappa.
Sure. Okay. Well, you're speaking about classification. So the classifications of spirits have many different criteria that have to be met before they're actually classified as that spirit. For vodka, vodka is actually the widest, purest category available. Anything that can be fermented can be made into vodka. First, you have your fermentation and conversion of sugar and alcohol. And then to produce vodka, vodka has to be distilled to 95% alcohol or 190 proof off the still. That essentially means that you are distilling just ethanol. It's the only thing you're basically taking off at 95%. Is relatively pure alcohol. You're physically enabled to run 100% pure alcohol in a still in any environment, no matter what the quality of the still is, because it's physically impossible to separate water from alcohol to 100%. What happens is you make vodka being the purest spirit, so you run it off your still at 190 proof, and then you bring it down to whatever your bottling proof is. So you bring it off the still at 190 proof, package our Spur vodka at 80 proof, so it's 60% water, 40% muscadine vodka. If we would have brought the the Muscadine spirit off the still at under 190 proof, let's say 189 proof, then our spirit would be a brandy because it's from a grape source. And anything, the classification is for brandy, is your spirit has to be taken off your still at 189 proof or under. You could bring off your brandy at 150 proof if you wanted to, and you could still be in that brandy classification. Grappa, bourbon, other whiskeys, those classifications are based on source material, and they have their own classification. For example, bourbon. Bourbon's very crazy these days. Bourbon has numerous classifications that have to be met, and then there's also some intricate parts in there that you have to be a little bit savvy reading your labels to understand what they mean. For example, bourbon is, your mash has to be a minimum of 51% corn, and then the other 49% can be not anything but any other grain. Typically people use barley, rye, other things. That's actually where the flavor comes from. Corn is very flavorless. It produces a decent ethanol, but it really has no character, no flavor. So hence, the minimum 51% to be bourbon is a historical number. But after you make the spirit for bourbon, it has to touch new charred oak. It just has to touch it, run it through a pipe, run it through something that's new charred oak, stick it in a barrel for a few minutes and dump it out. You can call it bourbon. To be a straight bourbon, the bourbon has to age a minimum of 2 years in new charred oak. If you didn't hit that oak criteria, let's say you ran a 51% corn mash, made your liquor, brought it off at the appropriate proof off the still, and then put it in a used whiskey barrel, then it would just be whiskey. It wouldn't be bourbon. So all the spirit classifications are regulated by the government, and they all have their funky little characteristics that you have to meet to get it on your label.
Well, those of us in the viticulture industry, of course, are most interested in the grape thing. What happens with grappa here in North Carolina?
Grappa is traditionally a peasant spirit. If you look back in history, the way grappa was made, it was the pressings of all the leftovers. And so the term grappa isn't protected by the Italian government, but I think we spoke before. I expect that term one day to be protected, similar to like champagne for wines and other things.
I know from my many visits to Italy over the years that that's one of my favorite after-dinner drinks is a little shot of grappa. Tell me about the name of your business there. Where did the word alcoholery come from, John? Everybody looks at that sort of says, what?
When we were naming our distillery and everything, so that's where the kind of creative juices started kicking in, and we started looking and naming and trying to kind of name off our place. So I wanted to think of a name of trying to capture my philosophy in making spirits. We make spirits similar to the way wine is produced, meaning you're unallowed to vintage date spirits. So we came up with our own term, which is single sugared spirits. So all of our spirits come from one sugar, like our Spurvaca comes from 2016 Carlos Muscadine wine, and that's it. Once this vintage is gone, it's gone. We won't have another one. So that's our single sugared spirit this year. So since we're launching just single spirits or off of single sugar, I always looked at those brands as one type of unit. And so I was thinking about different things in name for the wine business, for the alcohol business, and the term meritage. Meritage is the combining of the words merit and heritage. And there's other rules for making a meritage wine for particular wineries where it has to be their second largest spirit under a number of 100 cases, things of that nature. So that name stuck with me, and what I decided to name is, since we're an alcohol producer and I think of my spirits as art, we named ourselves the Alcoholery, which is the combination of the terms alcohol and gallery. We consider ourselves an alcohol gallery.
I was trying to figure out how that name came up. That's good. That's good, John. That was very clever.
We're starting to get some people to understand it. It's one of those things that I have a long way to go with education on spirits, of trying to inform people about the way we produce spirits, because spirits traditionally are produced from the cheapest, most readily available ingredients wherever you go. The history of where spirits come from those places because their sugars were readily available and cheap. The yield for spirits is so low that everyone's looking to make something else out of every part of it. And actually, it's where grappa comes from, because it's the peasant's liquor from the last pressings and became popular because you can still make those parts out of it if you do it right. Well, we start from the beginning. We only use first-run fruit, not last-run fruit. We don't use spoiled wine. We use the best wine. And that rolled into, you know, eventually I want people to understand, we're trying to make art with our alcohol, and it exceeded my expectations in quality.
Well, I'm certainly anxious to give it a shot one of these days, John.
I'm still processing. I'm small, meaning that it's me. I like to tell people I'm shipping, receiving, production, PR, sales, marketing. I'm all of it. I have a neighbor that's been working with me some, but all of this stuff is me. I still have a lot to produce. So far, I've produced about 150, 160 six-pack cases, and with my yield and everything else, I think my total first production will be 450 six-pack cases.
Well, I'm going to try to do my best to get my hands on one of those bottles along the way here someplace to give that a shot.
It's in Asheville's liquor store.
Great. Folks, we've been talking on the telephone with John Holman, who's the founder of American Alcoholery and Holman Distillery out in Moravian Falls, North Carolina. Hang on, folks. We'll be right back.
Today's program is being brought to you by
Roy Rattan's Underwater Basket Weaving Classes. Roy earned a college certificate in crafts and arts at the Mountain Bog Community College last year. He majored in cane chair repair and was impressed by the way the cane became much more manageable to cane seat bottoms when it was first soaked in water. That is where Roy had his Shazam moment. His big idea was to offer the very first underwater basket weaving classes. He built a small dam across the creek in his backyard and placed a number of flat stones on the bottom of the creek to sit on. He arranged a series of hanging pulleys from the tree branches so the spools of cane material could be easily spooled into the water by the students sitting on the underwater stone seats. His students would sit with their heads above water while they worked with the craft projects underwater. But there was so much chatter going on by everybody in class gossiping that it drove Roy a little crazy. Roy liked peace and quiet where he worked. That's when he got the idea of having everyone bring their own scuba gear so they could be totally underwater as they worked weaving their craft projects. He built the dam a little higher so that all the students were completely underwater. Now it was quiet during class. However, one of his students, Cecil, was chewing tobacco. Spitting with a scuba mask on is a bit tricky and leaves your scuba mask looking pretty nasty. Another student in the same class, Alice, took one look at Cecil's mask one day and had to leave class to heave along the creek bank. She never came back. Roy had to change his smoke-free environment sign to a tobacco-free environment to prevent future students from creating a problem. Roy Rattan's Underwater Basket Weaving Class is another special small business in the good old U.S. of A. here in Madison County, North Carolina. You can sign up for Roy Rattan's Underwater Basket Weaving Class today at Zuma's Cafe in downtown Marshall for only $1.298, including craft materials. But remember to bring your own scuba gear to class. Sign up today and get a free lesson in underwater rope making from Roy Rattan's rope making specialist. And now back to our regular program.
Welcome back, everybody. We've been talking on the telephone this morning with John Holman, who is the founder of the American Alcoholery and Holman Distillery out in Moravian Falls, North Carolina. John, just before the break, we were talking about your single sugar spirits and so forth. Help us understand a little bit what we might expect to see if we were coming to your place. Talk to us about the still and how big it is and so forth.
Sure. Well, we use two stills. They're twins, so they're exactly the same. Essentially, we have a 100-gallon round stainless steel kettle, which has four electric heating elements in it, basically the same elements you would have in a hot water heater. Inside that kettle, or on top of that kettle, we have plates. So there are eight plates on our still. Each plate is essentially a 6-inch tube of copper pipe with a perforated copper sleeve in the middle of each, or on the bottom of each one. Through those holes are what allows us to have reflux, which is condensation, vaporization back and forth. And the vapor will go through the holes, some of it will get caught up on the plates, and then condense and drip back down. These are eight high. And at the top of the still is what's called a diaphragmador. A deflagmador looks like an old Gatling gun. It has tubes that run through it and then copper spacing that you can't see through. Well, through that copper spacing, cold water runs through it. And since it sits at the top of the still and we're boiling our liquid, through that vaporization and condensation, when it hits the top of the still, we run cold water through it, and it knocks all the vapor back down into the column. The reason that sits up there is it helps us take our time and get effective separations in the alcohol. And above that is a lint arm. The lint arm is usually a perpendicular piece of copper pipe that goes over, which leads us into a condenser, which has cold water running through it, which helps us turn the vapor back into a liquid. So we have both those stills. We are electrically powered out here. I'm out in the middle of the country, so we don't have gas. It takes too much power to run solar. So when we built our building, some of my experience helped me. We have plenty of drainage and three-phase power, so we are fully electric out here. One other thing I failed to mention is we are going to eventually, we're in the process of planting our vineyards. We're going to put Muscadine Vineyards on property to produce an estate vodka. But we're fortunate enough to be surrounded by many great orchards. And one of the things I'm really proud of in my distillery that we're still refurbishing is I have a 40-inch apple mill and press that I purchased from Sugarloaf Orchards up on 16 in Moravian Falls. What I love about this press is they bought it brand new in the 80s. It's a humongous commercial press. And with the pasteurization laws, they quit using it in 2000. So this sat in their orchard for many years, and they didn't know or have any inkling to do anything with it. And I was able to find out, and I approached Bobby Lowe about it, and he sold it to me. And so we're in the process of refurbishing this gorgeous piece of old equipment. I love antiques, and I particularly love old things. They still make this press today. It's much more stainless steel than ours because this has a lot of old oak and wood on it. And since we're fermenting our products, we don't have to worry about pasteurization. So one of the things people come into the distillery and they get to look at, they're like, oh my gosh, what is that? And I love telling the story about it. We're not finished refurbishing it, but we're almost there, and it's just a humongous piece of metal from the 80s. And then everything is new to us. We have an old milk tank that we welded and refurbished that leads into our bottling line where we bottle our vodka. Everything's hand-bottled, hand-packed, hand-labeled. I've picked a bottle that can't be machine-labeled just for the purpose that when you look at it, you know we went through the process of hand-labeling it. We visually inspect, taste, smell every bottle product. It's a moment of pride when something leaves our distillery, and we want to make sure when somebody gets it, they understand that every attention to detail went into the production of it.
I have to say it's sort of unusual to find somebody who would have a bottle that you could not use a machine labeler on. I think that's cool.
My wife, when I was down here one night on our first run, and I single-handedly bottled, packed, labeled 69 cases. Wow. And the next morning I woke up and I was really sore from doing all this, and my wife posted on Facebook, our unautomated bottling line is complaining about being sore this morning. So I thought it was funny.
You talked about being proud of showing people around up there. So does that mean you have tours?
We do. We're by appointment. We're out in the middle of the country, so we don't have much foot traffic that comes by. So instead of having people just show up on the farm, we like people to contact us for an appointment. But I'm wide open. I like constructing, teaching people. I'm what's called a CSS, which is a Certified Specialist of Spirits. It's a certification done by the Society of Wine Educators in California. It was part of my previous job. It's basically a rigorous study and test on different spirits in the categories, history, current production, and what makes spirit spirit. So I love people coming out that want to know a lot about spirits. It helps me because I get to teach them what makes a good spirit and what makes a bad spirit. And so it helps me to give that education to people and let them pass it on to others so they're able to appreciate what they drink.
So somebody's coming through that part of the country, how would they contact you to arrange a tour?
They can go to our website, which is www.alcoholery.com. That's A-L-C-O-H-O-L-L-E-R-Y. Or they can call us here at 336-921-0386.
Okay, folks, you got the information there. Give her a shot and let John take you through and give you a private tour. You also talked about liking to teach things. You teach classes on this kind of thing someplace?
I do. I schedule classes out here. I try to get a decent group that wants to come out, and I'll teach them about distillation of spirits, a history and current production and production philosophies, and then vodka history, how you produce vodka, and then essentially what makes vodka. April 20th, I'll be at Savor Blowing Rock in Blowing Rock, North Carolina, at their event, and I'm teaching a seminar there on that particular subject. So that's going to be a shortened class. I think they've given me an hour, even though my classes are normally 2 hours. And if somebody wants to come out and see me there, I'd love to have them. They can go to SavorBlowingRock.com and find that particular list for seminars.
Okay, is there a charge for the classes?
Yes, there's a charge here. I'm charging $50 for the class for 2 hours. That includes a tasting and a souvenir copper shot glass. And then at Savor Blowing Rock, it's a shortened class, so they're charging $35.
Is that like a 1 hour?
It's 1 hour at Savor Blowing Rock. They've given me 1 hour, but I imagine I'll go over. I like to answer questions. I'm there till the people want me to leave.
Okay. Well, we have a similar philosophy here at our place. We have a teaching vineyard, and we do the same thing. We run formal classes, and it's sort of interesting to see the kinds of questions and the kind of people come through there and the number of vineyards that get started as a result of the work that we do. So it's always fun to do that.
Definitely. My philosophy is on spirits, is I'm trying to produce the best spirits possible, and that's starting from our base sugar. We coined a term for that one. We call ourselves a dirt-to-drink facility. You'll hear grain-to-glass facility, and when we started, we felt like that wasn't enough. That wasn't specific enough for people, because if they just took whatever grain, which is the old philosophy of making spirits, then it's hard to make the best in spirit if you don't start with the best sugar material. So we call ourselves dirt to drink. We believe that the best of anything comes from the best of everything.
Well, we have a similar philosophy here, except in our case, we try to control everything from the grass to the glass.
Yeah, nice. I like it.
Quite frankly, you're absolutely true going with quality materials. That does come out with the best quality end products. We spend a lot of time here talking about the dirt, talking about the soil, because if you can't have good, healthy soil, you can't possibly grow good, healthy grapes. And without good, healthy grapes, you can't make good wines. I think that's a good basic philosophy that you have there, from the dirt to drink. I love it. And the fact that you're going to put in some muscadines, how many acres are you going to be planning to put in up there?
We have planned 30 acres.
When do you think you'll start on it?
I'm hoping to start clearing land later on this year. The distillery is the focus right now, trying to get up and running, and I keep constantly finding myself running out of time. I can't really get on the excavator to start moving and make the vodka. It needs a lot of attention, so I'm hoping this year we'll start clearing a little bit of land and prepping our soil and get ready and start planting in 2019. Maybe 2018, if everything goes right. We might try 10 acres in 2018 and do the rest in 2019.
It sounds like a good plan. If you were to give some advice to somebody who would be considering starting a distillery someplace, tell me what you did right and what you'd do differently the next time.
Well, my advantage for starting a distillery is I worked and I was employed for over 6.5 years in the sales and marketing division for alcohol beverages. The biggest thing that you have to think about when you're starting a distillery, and in my opinion a winery, is that you're going to become a sales and marketing entity. And so the thing that you have to bone up the most on is sales and marketing, because you can make the best spirit and the best wine, period. However, if nobody buys it or drinks it, did you make the best? So that would be the first thought and the first thing to think about, is how you get to market. How are you going to get to sell to people? And then work backwards into your production. The thing we did and the thing that helped us was finding a hurdle and then figuring out the most cost-effective way to get around it. For us, and working in the industry, I was living in Fort Mill, South Carolina at the time, and we wanted to start in Charlotte just because we were going to stay living in our house. Well, the application process through TTD for starting a distillery will take you around 8 to 9 months. And you already have to have a facility before you begin the process. And so that would have cost us $50,000 in commercial rent for a building to sit there. And that's before any equipment purchases, any fermentation space, any other capital expenditures. So for me, you have to figure out end game first and then begin at the beginning and work forward. When you hit a hurdle, be creative, find a way around it. For us, get a way around the facility charge is a farm distillery. And the farm distillery, you're able to live at the premise. And so I talked my wife into it, who wasn't very happy about it. She is an air quotes city girl, and I am not a city guy, and I've always wanted to buy a farm, and somehow I got her on the ropes where she said okay, and I moved her out to Moravian Falls on the farm out here. And that's the way we kicked off and started. We were able to sell our house, move out here to the farm, and begin construction on the building. I think what I'm most proud of is that we own all of it. We have no loans on it. And I use my retirement money. I use my 401k that I built over 16.5 years to build this business. So I never thought I would work so hard in my retirement, even though I tell people I'm retired, just because I spent my retirement money on this business.
I have to tell you, here, I've never worked so hard, made less money, had more fun, and met more interesting people as when we started this operation.
I like to tell people that you can buy my vodka and you're basically paying me $1 an hour.
Well, folks, we've been talking on the telephone today with John Holman, who's the founder of American Alcoholery and Holman Distillery out in Moravian Falls, North Carolina. He's been very kind to give us a lot of his time and share with us some of the stuff that he's doing over at his interesting place. I recommend any of you to get a chance to get up in his place, go over and spend some time with him and learn something about it. John, we really appreciate your taking time to be with us today.
Wonderful. Thank you very much, Chuck. And if any of your listeners want to try Spur Vodka, they can go to any North Carolina ABC store, request Spur Vodka, and it's North Carolina code 20011.
Fantastic. Well, folks, you heard it there. And for today's program, we'll call that a wrap.
This is the Mountain Grapevine on WART Community Radio from Addison County, North Carolina. If you have a friend whom you think might enjoy my program, tell them my Thursday programs will be rebroadcast on Sundays at 6 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. This is Chuck Blethyn signing off for today. Cheers!